And welcome back in hour number two of Morning Drive on this Friday. Great to have you in. ESPN 102.5, The Game. An hour from now, Eli Gold, the voice of the Crimson Tide. But last night, the Preds' winning streak comes to a close. And I got to tell you, it's very odd. It's very rare that we're talking about a regular season. I mean, think about how crazy this statement is. We're talking about a regular season loss for the Predators. They went. It's one thing if you go a month without
it's only
a loss.
It's only the 15th win all season.
Right. And it's like, if you go a month without a loss in football season, that's pretty good. But to go a month without a loss in an 82-game season is pretty remarkable.
Yeah, and obviously 5-2 win last night for Toronto. Scott Hartnell gets on the board late to make it look even better than it really was. It really was not pretty. It was 1-1 close early. Toronto absolutely was the aggressor. They were faster. They were more aggressive on the forecheck. They outskated, outplayed, out everything the Nashville Predators last night. And it happens. It's not that big of a deal. It is sort of what you have to do if you want to beat this team. When you look at how this team has struggled certain times over the last, when they do struggle, which is not very often, it's when the other team comes out and punches you in the face. And I don't mean physically gives you like the face wash with the glove there. I mean, just you're the aggressive team. Take the game to the other team. And that when Nashville faces that, at times they can get a little slow and a little lackadaisical. And listen, it wasn't their best game last night. Not that big a deal. First regulation loss in over a month. But it does look like that the Predators now have to respond. And what do they do this weekend with Minnesota and Winnipeg, the 2 and the 3 seed in the division, the two teams chasing you? How do you respond is the big thing. Listen, it started with an Austin Matthews goal that just very few human beings can pull off. So at some point you have to just tip your hat to a guy that just goes, you know, it does something that normal humans can't do. When he pulled that puck back and fired in the second goal, you're just going, come on, man, seriously? Like, nobody else can do that. And Toronto's the emotion I had watching Toronto last night, it's interesting, because Toronto's played this team very well. They beat them last year at Bridgestone late in the year at home. They probably should have won the game in Toronto this year. What's interesting is just Toronto is a really hard team to hate. There's no real history on the ice between these two. Obviously, they would have only played in the Stanley Cup final. That hasn't happened. I would argue that the Toronto Maple Leafs are the best-dressed team in the Eastern Conference. So, like, I just love watching them because the sweaters are just amazing. And they have a U.S.-born superstar that U.S. hockey fans should be excited to watch in Austin Matthews. So, obviously not last night. But it's a hard team to hate. Like, it's easy to hate the Ducks because they're dirty. It's easy to hate Chicago because of lots of reasons. There's easy to hate a lot of teams. Toronto's not one of them. But if they play in the Cup Final and Toronto plays like that last night, it will be very different.
This is not the Braden Gall I'm accustomed to and I'm used to. First of all, you are not mad at Loyola Chicago. Now you're not angry with Toronto. All of our teams are getting dispatched
life's
by the
too
opposition,
short,
and
man.
You're just, I'm a fan.
Well, this is just one regular season game in 82, so it's not that big a deal. It's a huge deal to Tennessee, and it's again, the same thing with Austin Matthews' goal last night for the Predators is the same thing as Clayton Custer's shot against Tennessee. Like, sometimes the other guy, the player of the year candidate in the Missouri Valley Conference, just makes a crazy jump shot. You played great defense. You had a hand in his face, and Loyola Chicago got the win. It sucks. It's a part of sports. You got to move on from it. It's going to sting for a while, but Tennessee basketball is in really good shape. They got a great program coming back next year with great players. Barnes has got that thing going. And the Preds, there's no real concern about the Preds. The Preds lost last night, didn't play well, but you've got a chance to put the nail and the dagger in the Central Division coffin over the next three games. If you go out and beat Minnesota twice and Winnipeg in the next three games, you can end the Central Division battle. So last night was maybe a blueprint for other teams to win, but it didn't really mean a whole lot. A win or a loss doesn't mean a whole lot.
Right, and I think, too, we haven't talked about a loss in so long that, you know, we're kind of caught up in it and have a little bit of that, oh my God, the sky's falling. Like, what's going to happen now? They lost a game, and they didn't look good doing it. But, I mean, that's happened at times throughout this season, and they bounce back and go on another winning streak.
Well,
so,
I mean, if anybody's concerned, then they haven't been paying attention.
Right.
They're using that football mentality of overreacting to one loss. It's an 82-game season. This team is fine.
No, being humbled in the NHL is a good thing. It's not that way in college football. You get humbled in college football, your season's over.
True, yeah.
Like one game, you're done. Being humbled in hockey is a good thing. And I think this team, it's fine. Like you could.
I love how they took it.
Yeah,
I mean, love how they took this loss.
They're angry about it.
Oh, yeah. They're very angry about it. You listen to Peter Laviolette after the game. I mean, you can hear it with him.
Yeah, you look at parts of that Buffalo game. You know, I thought the Colorado game, we played a pretty good game. There's definitely parts of some games where out in Arizona, you know, there's things I don't think we did well. Buffalo, there's things I don't think we did well. And then when you get the points, it sometimes gives you a little bit of a false sense of we're playing well. And the consistency hasn't been as good as I think it was maybe a little bit earlier. And tonight, I think, was a reflection of that. We were flat tonight.
Yeah, they were flat. I mean, you could see it from the jump, just the disparity in shots on goal early on was all Toronto. They were putting pressure on the Preds from the jump, and that was pretty much the way the game played out the entire night. And look, it's going to happen. We know they were playing. This is a very, very good team. Vegas says they're the odds-on favorite, but the fact is you go almost over a month without a regular season loss. I mean, that's virtually unheard of.
Yeah, and you're going to regress to the mean. I mean, the best teams in the league win 50 games in a season, which means – that's 32 other times that you didn't win. So like it's sort of like baseball. The greatest teams in baseball history still lost 45 or 50 times in a season. So it's not that big a deal. What can you learn from it? Which is why I've been asking for the last month. Okay, you're playing great. How do you then focus on getting better when you're playing great? And that was my very first question to Victor Arvidsson and Mattias Ekholm on Wednesday at Smashville Live, and they said even Victor Arvidsson was like, power play's got to get better. And power play still needs to get better. That's an issue right now. This team's got a great power play. When it's playing well, it's one of the best power plays in the NHL. It's not playing well right now. They've got to figure out a way to get the power play going. They had opportunities to get back in the game on the power play last night when it's tied 1-1 and they hit the post twice. They've got to finish on the power play. And that's just one little thing you can work on to take this team from great to elite and make them a legit championship caliber team. They're a championship caliber team already, but there's no guarantees in the postseason. You improve the power play, you play a little bit better defense, all of a sudden they look genuinely unbeatable in the postseason.
Champions hate to lose, and I love what I heard last night out of Ryan Ellis talking about the defeat to Toronto.
I think we deserved every second of that. Good team came in here, played a lot better than us, and I think you look at this stretch we've had of whatever 14, 15, 16 games with points or whatever it is. We've been squeaking out wins, we've been finding ways to win, but that's not playoff hockey, and I think we've got away with that for some time, and it finally caught up with us playing a really good team, and now give them credit, they were so much better than us tonight.
One thing I always love in sports, in life, is accountability. That sounded like accountability last night from Ryan Ellis. Like, we deserved what came our way.
And it's why Ryan Ellis is so beloved by the fans and in that locker room. Listen, there's a lot of players on this team that, as a fan, you can fall in love with. Victor Arvidsson, P.K. Subban, Roman Josi, Pekka Rinne. You go on and on and on and on and on down the list. Ryan Ellis is my favorite player on the team. I don't think he's the best player on the team, but he's close. But that is the guy, and that is why right there. You hear him talk about that because he's not the only one. I mean, Mattias Ekholm, they're all about accountability. All these guys, Philip Forsberg, they're all about accountability. And so it's why I think a loss is a good thing. Humble them, reset their focus, because guess what? You've got three games against Minnesota and Winnipeg coming up, in which case you've got to be better than you were last night. And it's just 1 out of 82, but you got to be better than last night.
There is a reason that Peter Laviolette and David Poile created a position called associate captain, and they gave it to Ryan Ellis.
Yes.
And you just heard it right there.
And
I think that's a prime example.
And it's not because he's 180 years old and has been fighting since the Civil War. the Brigadier General.
On a side note, Sports Business Journal has nominated the Preds for Franchise of the Year in sports. So that's a pretty cool honor. The Preds, the Rockets, the Astros, and a handful of other teams in, I would assume, the four major sports.
Hard to beat the Astros on that list. First championship in franchise history, bring it back to Houston in a year that city desperately needed some help and some good news and some fun experiences. It's going to be hard to beat that franchise, because that's sort of like the Vegas GM of the Year debate. It's David Poile probably has done the best job of any GM in the NHL this year, but he's not going to win it because an expansion franchise is going to win a division, which has never been done before. It's hard to argue with what the Astros accomplished. I would have no problem. Now, the Rockets, no, come on. Nashville's better than the Rockets. I got no problem with that. But the Astros, that one's a tough one to argue with because of what they did, how they did it, and when they did it for a city that desperately needed that type of good vibes and good feelings. that's going to be a tough story to top.
615-737-1025 is the number. Coming up 8 o'clock, we'll talk with Eli Gold, the voice of Alabama. Ryan Hartman from the Preds in the 9 o'clock hour. A lot to do. Sweet 16. We've got Johnny Manziel news. There's just so much going on. Do not touch that dial. That's right, Craigie. You tell him. Nashville's best sports talk. It's Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. 615-737-1025 is the phone number. We'll get to the latest with Johnny Manziel back in the news coming up in a little bit, but continuing on with some Preds conversation. Let's get some calls. What do you say? We started off with Robert.
The sky's falling, guys.
Yes, the season is over. Falling. This team's going to be one and done. Oh, my goodness. Robert in Nashville up next on Morning Drive. What's up, Rob?
I'm going to put the blame on Jared Stillman because he's like, oh, yeah, Floyd, PK Rene is going to be the MVP, and that's all we need to care about. Be quiet, Floyd. I mean, Jared, just be quiet.
I mean, he's not that crazy for thinking he's a heart candidate. He's not going to win the Hart Trophy. But
no, I'm just saying, like, he's just bad juju for, like, all of Nashville. Like, Jared Stillman is just bad juju.
Well, I hate to break this to you, Robert. I think you're giving Stillman too much credit there.
All right, so what do you got on the Preds loss?
Say what now?
What do you got on the Preds?
I just they're gonna take one game at a time. We can't get ahead of ourselves one series at a time. We should do just fine. We do that, we'll be just fine. So.
Yeah, I agree with you.
Enjoy your show, bro.
Yeah, right, and I think Robert, thank you, man. I think it's about how you respond tomorrow and Sunday night. I mean, you've got two huge games in the division on the road. How do you respond? That's all. It's not overly complicated. You played poorly. Everybody knows it. They came in, outplayed you, played a better game, and you lost. Got blown out at home. It happens during the regular season of a hockey, 82-game hockey season. How do you respond? And that's what matters. Because guess what? There's going to be a night in the postseason where a puck doesn't bounce your way or another goaltender steals a game from you. And you're going to have to show up two nights later against the same exact team and do something about it.
You need selective amnesia. Is what you need.
Yeah, you got it. Yes, short memory, 100%, both good and bad. I mean, I think that's really important for starting pitchers from pitch to pitch. It's really important for goaltenders. Like Pecorine, I hope he's gone through some serious therapy to get rid of all of the memories from last year's trips to Pittsburgh. Like, just get all that out of your brain.
Yep.
Because I think you have to – it's what are you going to – and the late, great Don Meyer – one of the winningest basketball coaches in the history of sports. I had a chance to get to meet him early in my career and just listen to him talk. Just a crazy smart guy. And all he would ever say, whether you had a dunk or a turnover on the last possession, his entire life's philosophy was, what are you going to do next?
Mm-hmm.
What are you going to do next? It doesn't matter if you got beat 5-2 last night. It doesn't matter if you win 6-0 last night. All that matters is the next game. And in a playoff series, you got to put it all behind you very, very quickly.
615-737-1025. Tristan in Hendersonville, who's working on that playoff beard, is next up on Morning Drive. What's up, Tristan?
Of course you cut to the Lipscomb guy after talking about Don Meyer. Good job, guys.
That was all part of the plan.
Of course. So I'm going to admit to myself, and I'll put myself on the list early. I definitely overreacted last night. I have to realize that it's an 82 game season. You're going to lose against these guys. You're going to lose against good teams, and it's absolutely correct that you do have to respond really, really well these next three games. And then that East Coast trip is really, really, really important. They're facing playoff caliber teams that they could potentially face in the Stanley Cup Finals. So it's all about saying, hey, we might have lost really bad to Toronto, but at the end of the day, we can still compete. And, hey, that Toronto loss, hey, Toronto media, hey, national media, that was just a bad night for the Preds. So I apologize to Nashville Preds fans all around Nashville that I definitely overreacted. I'm sorry.
Did you get arrested at Bridgestone Arena last night or something?
No, I didn't get arrested. I just put something up on Preds fan page, and it's the most looked at post right now, and I'm dealing with that lately. That's not fun. Not at all. I just wanted them to be as competitive as possible. And, stuff like this happens. It's an 82-game season, like I said. And I was calling in also to discuss Michigan and the potential of Loyola. I'll say this much. I've been a Michigan fan for a long time. Our track record against Catholic teams ain't the best. So Loyola has the potential to be a Cinderella team. To upset our spoils too, so
that's great.
It's going to be an interesting weekend all over.
Thank you, Tristan.
Good stuff, buddy.
Yeah, he was like, He was apologizing to the city of Nashville like he
disgraced his family.
Yeah, like he got kicked out of the building last night and his kids were watching. Like, what happened last night?
My wife wants to divorce me.
Yeah, Jasmine in Murfreesboro. Jasmine, what's up?
Hey guys, kind of gonna make fun of the fans of Nashville right now. I mean, like you said, it's an 82 game season and we're in single digits of games left before the postseason. Don't freak out. It actually is probably a good thing that we lost, so we can go ahead and get that off our shoulders going into the postseason. It's not that big of a deal.
No, yeah. It's a good point. I'm just wondering, like,
Thank you, Jasmine. Are
we getting to the point now where we're a little spoiled and almost entitled?
Well, it's not that might be some of it. What I really think it is, and as Jasmine's talking, I'm thinking about if this had happened last year, it would have been a much bigger deal because they were fighting tooth and nail for every spot. So most teams in the NHL right now are fighting tooth and nail for every spot. So a loss does matter in this situation, especially when you get blown out at home. But when you are 8 points up in the division and are the number one team in the league, it doesn't matter as much. You can take it with more of a grain of salt and say, what can we learn from it? Let's be humbled by it and let's get motivated by it and let's respond tomorrow night against Minnesota. And I think that's what the makeup of this locker room is all about. But again, had this been last year at this time, that would have been a devastating loss because when they lost to Toronto last year, it was a devastating loss. So I don't think they had clinched when they played Toronto last year. It was one of the last games of the regular season. But if you were fighting tooth and nail for the 6th seed or the 5th seed or the 7th seed or to get into that 2-3 matchup, then last night's huge because there are only 9 games left. So this franchise has never been in this situation where a late loss doesn't really do anything to you. They've never been in first place by 8 points in the division. This has never happened before. So I'm with her. I think losing and being humbled a little bit is a good thing this time a year. You could stand probably one or two more of those, and then you want to sort of ramp it back up again the last week of the season.
We will get the actual number on this, but I feel like in general there's a little bit of a – I don't know if it's an issue, but – it seems like they have a little bit of trouble with some of these Eastern Conference teams. And I don't know, out of the actual record of 48, 15, and 10, and they've got 106 points, how many losses have come to the East. I mean, I could be way off. I'm just spitballing here off the top of my head. It feels like...
Well, recently Detroit, and Detroit's not even good. They struggled against that Canadian swing. They struggled. Now, they picked up points in almost all those games, but they struggled against the New York Islanders. They struggled against Ottawa. Bad teams. So the Eastern Conference thing, they've had a pretty good record early in the season against the Eastern Conference, if my memory serves correct, but listen, Toronto's really good, and Toronto specifically has been good against them. Boston, they've struggled against this year. Very, very good team. Tampa, they've lost to Tampa, so those are really good teams, and they don't know them very well.
Let me ask you this, because we talked about what of the 3, 4, 5 different teams in the Eastern Conference that provide matchup problems for the Preds should they meet in the Stanley Cup Finals. I think we were in agreement over the last 2 days that between Tampa, Boston, Washington, Pittsburgh, and Toronto, Toronto was the team that we felt the most comfortable with. Does that change after last night's outcome?
I think Toronto is really good, and when they played in Toronto earlier in the year, I told Chase, I said, man, I think Toronto's really dangerous matchup, and they're still probably 5th on that list. Now, they split with Pittsburgh. They split with Boston. They obviously haven't played Washington the second time, but they beat the Capitals the first time at home. Now, I think they've won both games at home against Pittsburgh and Boston. They lost on the road. And, of course, Tampa Bay, they play on the road as well, and they lost in overtime here. So, you know, losing to Toronto, losing to Tampa, splitting with Pittsburgh, splitting with Boston, all of this tells me that they're capable of beating these teams, but that those teams are just as good as Nashville. And don't count your chickens before they're hatched.
Against the East, the Predators are 15-7-5.
Okay, so I'm way off.
Can you pick the good teams, though? I mean, they've lost to some bad teams, too, but I want to know what their record is against, let's say, the top 6.
So basically,
okay.
you're going to have to do more math during the break.
Chase,
well, no, I got you. They're 1-1 against Boston. They're 1-1 against Pittsburgh.
Mm-hmm.
They're 1-1 against, or they're 0-1 against Tampa. They're 1-0 against Washington.
And they're 0-1-1 against Toronto.
And they're 0-1-1 against Toronto. So they're
1-0 against Washington.
So roughly 500 or slightly under?
Yeah, right around there.
Okay.
So.
All right, 615-737-1025. When we come back, Sweet 16 from last night, we preview tonight's games. and Johnny Manziel in the news again. Stay there. It's Morning Drive.
And if you're watching the Sweet 16, some college hoops tonight, I know, super easy, awesome way to do it. Xfinity. That's right. The future of awesome is here, and its name is the Xfinity Stream app. All your TV, all in one place with the Xfinity Stream app. Stream live TV and Xfinity on demand on any device at home or on the go. If you're an X1 customer, you can also stream or download your cloud DVR shows to your device and watch them anywhere. So you record them at home, then you can download them on your app, on the app, and onto your tablet or device or laptop or phone anywhere you're going, as long as you've got the hotspot there. The app is perfect for college basketball fans. There's a college basketball section of the Xfinity Stream app that puts all of your hoops needs into one place, no matter what obscure channel that game may be on, as they tend to be this time of year. With the app and in just one tap, I've got two or three games to choose from right there in front of me. I used it all last weekend. I used it last night as I was flipping between the Kentucky loss and the Gonzaga loss. I'm flipping back and forth. The wife's asleep in bed, so I put the headphones on the tablet, and I watch all the basketball I could possibly need, and I don't bother anybody else in the house or in the bedroom. So it's just a little Kentucky basketball, a little Gonzaga basketball on the Xfinity Stream app, and it's all made possible by Xfinity. Get started with Xfinity Internet and TV for $39.99 a month for 12 months, plus add Xfinity Mobile with up to 5 lines of talk and text at no extra cost. Call 1-800-XFINITY, visit Xfinity.com, or drop into an Xfinity store today for more details. Offer ends 4/21/18. Restrictions apply, not available in all areas.
Dan, it is Morning Drive on ESPN 102.5 The Game. We're live from the Game Nashville studios, presented by Wholesale Inc. Mount Juliet, 615-737-1025. We'll get back to the hoops as well as Johnny Manziel in just a moment. But let's put a little bit of a bow on this Preds discussion, and we wrap it up with Paul in Nashville. What's going on, Paul?
Hey, guys. I was at the game last night, and it was annoying to watch. But I think we have to put it in perspective. I think we're spoiled with not a loss in a month, or not a regulation loss in a month. And the Lightning got blown out by the Senators this month. The Penguins got blown out by the Oilers, they got blown out by the Islanders the other day. Any team that you say is great, we can go back in the last month and find a team that you would say is not as good as put them on the mat. It's just how the league works. It's just what happens. I think what bothers me more is all the trophy talk and the Vegas favorite talk. I'm sure that doesn't affect the players at all, but I think the focus needs to be on the playoffs. But just a regulation loss in the season, that's just what happens, and it happens to literally everybody, every team you're concerned about.
Yeah, and I think the other thing too, Paul, and we appreciate the call, you're spot on, is, you know, we get so consumed with what we're doing here locally with the Preds. Well, Toronto is in the middle of a logjam of really talented teams in the Eastern Conference with four or five teams that could easily represent the East in the Stanley Cup Finals. So, you know, they've got to come in with their foot on the gas as much as anybody.
No question, yeah. It was certainly a more meaningful game to them than it was to us. And it happens to everybody. But, you know, it's absolutely not a reason to panic. That's absurd.
No, of course not, Paul. And Toronto is relatively locked into their seed. I mean, they're fighting with Boston for home ice in the 2-3 game, but they're basically locked into a 2-3 series with Boston. The only good news for Preds fans is that one of those teams will be eliminated.
Yeah.
I think both of them are dangerous against Nashville. And what you'd like to see, ideally, is, and it's not going to happen, but, you know, Pittsburgh having to play Columbus in the first round would be a really tough battle, because Columbus is extremely hot right now. They've won 10 straight games. I'd like to see Columbus and Pittsburgh, because then maybe Columbus can do the rest of the NHL some favors and maybe get knock Pittsburgh out. But listen, of the good teams in the East, and I'm counting the top five, which is Washington, Pittsburgh, Tampa, Boston, and Toronto, the Predators are 3-4-1. They have not beaten them. In a 7-game series, they would have lost that series. So the point is once you get to that championship round, all bets are off, and the other team is just as good as you.
Yeah, I mean, that's why I've been saying it's a coin flip.
If it's one of those five, if it's somebody else that makes a deep run, then you feel comfortable about being the better team. But if it's one of those five, you will not be just automatically the better team. Now, every series in the Western Conference, they will be the better team. They will probably have home ice, and they will probably be favored. But against the Eastern Conference, that may not be true.
Okay, so we'll get to some Sweet 16 stuff in a couple of moments, but I saw yesterday Johnny Manziel back in the news as he is throwing at a San Diego Pro Day in front of 35 NFL scouts, and it got me wondering, whether or not we will actually see Johnny Manziel on an NFL roster at some point in 2018.
I would say no. 13 teams were there yesterday looking at him. Maybe there's somebody desperate enough to make the move, but it's one thing to bring in Tebow as a gimmick. It's another thing to bring in Johnny Manziel as a gimmick. Two very opposite sides of the coin when it comes to personality and distraction, right? Like, Tebow's a distraction for good reasons, and Manziel's a distraction for bad reasons. I just don't know if he's good enough. I mean...
Well, one of those 13 teams happened to be your Tennessee Titans, according to the ESPN report. So they need a backup quarterback.
I would take Colin Kaepernick in 100 times out of 100 over Johnny Manziel.
So would I. No doubt.
Would you take Blaine Gabbert or would you take Johnny Manziel?
Blaine Gabbert.
Gabbert.
Would you take Matt Moore or would you take Johnny Manziel?
Johnny Manziel is irrelevant to me.
Okay.
He's completely irrelevant.
I do think, though, if we're looking at it from a sheer numbers standpoint, is he one of the best 64 quarterbacks in the world? I can't name another. Now, we just mentioned, what, three backups right there? I can't name another 28.
Everybody that's a backup is better than him.
Well, let's do this. Is better than him. Would you take Matt Castle or Johnny Manziel?
Oh, God, don't make me do that.
I've already seen Matt Castle here, so I would go Manziel.
Would you take...
See, I think you... But in a backup, the things that you need in a backup are dependability. You need veteran, you know, stability, and you need someone to hold the fort down and, like, withstand the siege for a couple of games.
Mariota and
Johnny
Manziel...
Manziel's not that. Manziel turns the ball over and acts crazy.
But they have the same similar skill sets.
I don't think that matters. The skill set isn't what matters. Like, the system is... If you're a good coach, Matt LaFleur, you're going to cater the system to player you have.
Of course.
What you need is someone who comes in and is a game manager. You need someone who comes in and plays super within the confines of the offense that doesn't take any chances at all.
See, I hate that term.
But you have to. That's
game
what
manager translated means you stink.
Fine. That's great. That's why you're a backup. But you can't have a gunslinger as your backup. You can't have a guy running around taking chances. You need someone to hold the fort for just that one or two games until the starter comes back.
If they lose Mariota, odds are the season's shot anyway.
Well, then there's no point in this discussion. What's the point of the discussion then?
But I mean, I would rather if you lose Mariota, I would rather go down swinging with Johnny Manziel, trying to carry and will this team and whatever adjective you want to use, as opposed to, well, let's just have Matt Castle come in and not just basically throw up all over himself.
And I'm talking about one or two or three games where Mariota's coming back and you've got a chance to make if you're talking about Mariota's out for the season with 12 games to go in the year, season's done. I don't care who plays. Yeah. It doesn't matter. You're not going to make the playoffs with Manziel. You're not going to make the playoffs with Gabbert. You're not going to make the playoffs with any of these guys. So to me, the conversation...
They might not make the playoffs with Mariota.
Right. So to me, this conversation is irrelevant if you lose your starting quarterback for the season. What we're talking about here is what happened last year, where you cannot go on the road against a bad team in Miami, and you need one start from a guy, and dude just can't deliver. And in that situation, you cannot have a gunslinger running around acting all crazy, throwing the ball all over the place, trying to make crazy throws and crazy plays, playing outside of the offense, and things break down. And like, you can't have what you need is a guy who just sort of like shortens the game. You run the football with Derrick Henry and Deion Lewis. You try to shorten the game and try to make it a low scoring defensive battle, which is what they were really good at winning last year. That to me, that's the guy you want is whoever that. Now Matt Castle is not good enough for that, but Blaine Gabbert probably is.
Okay, so somebody just texted me this question. Who's back in the league first, Manziel or Kaepernick?
See, I think, and this is just my personal opinion, I think Colin Kaepernick has a lot of power as long as he's out of the league. I think Kaepernick loses some of his platform the second he joins a team because the team will put a muzzle on him and tell him to kind of tone it down. A team will make him sort of fall in line a little bit, and I think he loses his power. I think he loses his platform. I think he knows that as long as nobody signed him, people pay more attention to him.
I feel like it's almost dependent upon the franchise because either guy you bring in is a distraction. One's just a partying maniac trying to get his life back together. The other has a political agenda, and you're going to have a distraction either way. And the bottom line is they're both going to be backups, so you don't want that kind of attention over the backup quarterback.
But one of the distractions disappears a lot quicker.
Yeah.
You bring in Colin Kaepernick. He stands up in front of the podium. He answers all the questions. And then
people move on.
There's five or six news stories about it. There's some newspaper stories about it. There's talk on talk radio in that city. But after about a week, you move on because he's focused on playing football. With Johnny Manziel, the distraction could just go on forever. It could just be every day. You could just be like, what did he do last night? What did he do last night? What did he do last night? And obviously, we're rooting for Johnny Manziel to get his life in order. Everybody should be rooting for everybody to sort of overcome those types of things.
Of course.
And I think we all are. But if you give him a big contract and all of a sudden he's living the life again, it's dangerous. But, and that to me is where there's more of a distraction.
That's why I think there's less of a risk with Kaepernick.
I tend to agree.
But they're going to be backup quarterbacks, so how big is the contract anyway?
And one is wildly more proven as an actual quarterback.
Yeah.
One's an actual quarterback and the other guy has started like five games.
Right. And you know, the thing with Kaepernick is you get a little distraction, but at the same time, I think he wants to get back in the league and he's passed the torch. So, I mean, he's going to do what he needs to do to get back in the league and then be a backup and maybe a starter.
And I know this – I don't know how popular this will be, but I think he'll show up at some city if he ever gets signed. And I think if he continues to do all the things that he is apparently doing, which is donating a ton of money and time to charity, talking to veterans, getting to know people that are going through these issues, if he's continuing to walk the walk, I think people will learn pretty quickly that he's just his stance really isn't all that controversial. Like, hey, I'd like equality in this country. We all sort of agree with that. Like, this is not a really controversial thing. Now, what he's doing, the protest was controversial, but the actual issue itself is very innocuous.
Yeah.
We all want racial equality in this country. At least we should. For those of you who don't, I don't want you listening.
And I think the reality is, too, with Manziel, the fact that there were 13 teams and 35 scouts or whatever the numbers were just goes to show you that this league needs quarterbacks. There's a lot of bad quarterbacks that are still being employed collecting paychecks. So if Johnny Manziel has NFL eyes on him, I mean, there's got to be some level of interest and intrigue for his services, whatever that might be.
I think they're
not just there to waste time.
But again, if you're good enough to play, the NFL will find you, right? Whether you're a small school guy, whether you're a retread, you know, whatever, the NFL will find you. And teams are so desperate for a quarterback, backup or otherwise, starter or otherwise, that everybody will look. They'll look under every rock. They'll turn over every rock and look in every nook and cranny. It doesn't mean anyone thinks that he's capable of actually playing quarterback in the NFL.
And real quickly, one note on the Titans. I know we were talking about Mike Wallace the last couple of days as possibly an option. The Eagles signed him to a one-year deal yesterday. So Titans, maybe we're looking for that vertical stretch-to-field type of guy. I think he got like a one-year, $2.5 million deal. So he is off the board. If you were a Titans fan, expecting anything else in free agency.
Go ahead, Chase.
And they also signed a versatile offensive lineman yesterday previously with the Bucs, and I probably am going to butcher his last name, but Kevin Pamphile, I think is how you say it, but he can play all five positions on the offensive line.
I think depth along the O-line is something we've talked about. Interesting, we talked to Jason Wolf yesterday and said inside the building they don't view wide receiver as a need. And
I've been trying
to tell you this.
Yeah.
That they've invested in wide receiver last year. They're going to develop those guys first before they invest in a bunch of other guys. They've got Corey Davis, Rashard Matthews, Taywan Taylor, Tajay Sharp's coming back this year, Delaney Walker, Jonnu Smith. They may draft somebody late, but I think that this team is comfortable with who they've got. They want to grow those guys into starters before they go investing in free agents and draft picks. So I'm interested to see what they do with those guys.
615-737-1025 if you want to get in. Eli Gold's coming up top of the hour. Stay there. It's Morning Drive, ESPN 1025 The Game. Morning Drive on this Friday. Welcome back in, ESPN 1025 The Game. Big couple of hours coming up from 8 until 10. We've got Eli Gold in about 12 minutes. Kyle Hartman from the Preds.
Ryan.
What did I say, Kyle?
Ryan Hartman.
Where the hell did I get
There's
Kyle
a lot of Ryans
from?
On the team. If you just say Ryan, you're probably
going to
get
Kyle.
You'll probably get a lot of Ryans.
Yeah, for now on, he's Kyle Hartman. We're just going to start. We're going to start. Like, I'm Steve, so he'll be
That's
Kyle.
That's true. Good morning, Steve.
Good morning, Steve. Meanwhile.
Good morning, Steve.
Yeah, exactly. So real quickly, though, with this Johnny Manziel thing, I know we were talking about it last segment with him and Kaepernick. At the end of the day, they're both going to bring a lot of fanfare. Does it come down to the organization that can handle it? Like, Bill Belichick can always seem to squash things because the team is bigger than the individual.
It probably does. I think it also depends on how stable, and I can't decide if this is a real reason or not, but how stable your starting quarterback is. Like, you know, if he's playing behind Ben Roethlisberger, either one of those guys, Kaepernick or Manziel, I don't think there's a quarterback controversy. If he's playing behind Drew Brees has no Drew Brees isn't scared of losing his starting job to Johnny Manziel or Colin Kaepernick. Aaron Rodgers is not afraid. Pete Carroll in that locker room, while it's at times a little freewheeling and weird, it's still Russell Wilson's job. There's no concern about losing your starting job. So I think that that's to me, where maybe because we've got these questions still about LaFleur, the coordinator, and Marcus Mariota, and how are they going to look together, I want to be very clear. I am 100% on board with Marcus Mariota being the franchise quarterback for the Tennessee Titans for the next 12 years. I think they should lock him up today, and every day that goes by, his contract gets more and more expensive. So I want to be very clear where everyone knows where I stand on this. But not everybody thinks Marcus is a surefire lock to be their starter. I mean, there's some people that still want to see more from Marcus. And so if there's even just 12 to 15 to 20% of the fan base that thinks that Marcus isn't the guy, are you creating a psychological issue by bringing in a guy that's going to get more fanfare and has a bigger personality? And I think that's Johnny Manziel. Again, I think Kaepernick's a distraction, but it's a distraction for like a week and a half.
Yeah,
and then it goes away. With Manziel, it's going to be constant, I think, because you want to see him on the field, or you know he's got the flair, or maybe he's out at night and hey, you see him at Cheesecake Factory, or you see him at the steakhouse, and I just think there's more there.
Oh, he's a walking TMZ story.
Right, there's more. Like, there's just, it's going to be a constant, where's Johnny tonight, where's Johnny tonight? Like, you're going to have to, it's like tracking Dez Bryant where Jerry Jones, even though I don't like Jerry Jones at all, what Jerry Jones had to do with Dez Bryant was, like, follow him around to make sure he was behaving himself. Is that what they're going to have to do? It just doesn't, nothing about it seems to fit at all. What John Robinson's trying to do. And Kaepernick, again, we're not worried about Colin Kaepernick going out making a fool of himself at night at a club, acting like an idiot, getting arrested. That's not what we're worried about with Colin Kaepernick. There are other distractions there, but it's a very different distraction.
It's almost, though, too, because you mentioned, and we've talked about this with free agency and spending, that they've got to lock up Mariota, they've got to lock up Taylor Lewan. It's almost as if they're going to bring in some innocuous, unrecognizable backup just for the sheer sake of eliminating any debate about, well, Marcus is going to be a free agent, and there's, oh, by the way, this capable backup, at least with the Kaepernick side of things, that, well, he did play in a Super Bowl. You almost eliminate any potential controversy heading into a negotiating period.
If you bring Matt Moore or Blaine Gabbert in, there's no – there's a clear hierarchy. Again, I believe there should be a clear hierarchy no matter who you bring in. Like, even if you traded for A.J. McCarron, I would be like – I know A.J. McCarron wants his shot, right? He wants to start. That's why he's going – that's why he was wanted out of Cincinnati – And that's why he's in Buffalo, although there's rumors that Buffalo might want to trade up to the two spot to get a quarterback. And I'm going, Buffalo, what are you doing? You were in the postseason. You got like two first-round picks and two second-round picks. Just surround A.J. McCarron. Let him give a let him have a shot. And if he fails, then you can draft a quarterback next year, but you've improved your team. Now I'm off on a Buffalo Bills tangent. But even if you bring in A.J. McCarron, I just personally believe in Marcus. I think Marcus is the franchise quarterback that this franchise has been looking for since Steve McNair retired. And I don't want anything to derail that. I want to give him full opportunity to play.
Let's get an update quickly as we wrap up the hour on the stupid poll question of the day.
Yeah, let's do that as I pull it up on Twitter. So our stupid poll question of the day at 1025_MD. Is there an age cutoff for wearing a hat backwards? 50% of you say yes, 39% say no, and 11% say only for Braden Gall.
Ah, those 11 percenters, baby.
P1.
Those are my people right there. Here's what I'd like to know. With the 50% that say there should be an age limit, what is that number?
Well,
that's what I'd like to know.
I would see, this is just the way.
Says 18.
No, it's higher.
Come on.
I think when you get to...
For the record, Nick and I are both sitting in this studio with our hats on backwards. And we're both in our early... I'm in my mid-30s.
D. Smith says absolutely, and Braden is way over the max age.
Yes.
Taylor responds to that, 25 is the absolute oldest one, should be allowed to wear a backwards cap. The only exception to this rule would be at Jason Fitz, hashtag RIP.
So why does Fitzy get to do it? That's ridiculous.
I don't know. He played in a band.
He played in a worldly successful rock and roll band in Rio and stuff?
They are supposed to block the sun from your eyes, so they should be used only for what they're made for. Only exception is catchers, but that's just
me. This is where I need Derek Mason here, because Derek Mason would be able to tell me and tell everybody out there that everything you wear is an accessory and is a fashion statement, and it's not about functionality. Yeah, if you want to wear a hat backwards, you wear your hat backwards,
I can't
sir.
Ever recall
this is America.
A day in my life where I put a hat on because of the sun in my eyes. Maybe because I didn't want to burn my head, but not because of the sun in my eyes.
Beach, pool, and or golfing, I would wear a hat forwards for sun purposes, maybe.
Well, there's these.
It might cross my.
See,
that might
like
be a part of it.
A couple of weeks ago, they created these things. It's a brand new invention. They're called sunglasses.
Yeah, but I don't.
That keeps
I don't.
The sun out of your
so
eyes.
Beach and pool, yes. I don't like wearing sunglasses when I'm golfing, because they fall off. So I'll go with the hat.
I agree.
When I'm golfing, just because there's physical activity going on, and I'm not wearing like the wraparound ones that like have like a strap in the back or whatever. I'm not going that far. I'm not going Chris Sabo.
So sunglasses at the beach are. Absolutely
it's a
necessary.
But you also, like, and the beach hat I wear is not even like a, like, I guess old people would call it a ball cap. I don't wear a ball cap at the beach. I'm wearing, like, that giant, you know, beach hat that's got, like, the full 360-degree bill on it, you know what I mean? Like, the big one that just, yeah, you got to have some protection at the beach.
615-737-1025.
Backwards for life, yo.
That is the number to get involved in the show at any point over these 4 hours. And the real thing is, You got to wear sunglasses at the beach, because if you're with your girlfriend or your wife and you see another hot chick,
oh god,
you know, you just got to be able to protect yourself. You got to shield the vision. You know what I'm saying?
Dilly dilly.
Exactly right.
Or you marry a woman that will do that with you.
Well, now that's quality.
Well,
it's good work by you.
You just got to have an open relationship. No, I don't mean like that.
Even Floyd thought that was funny. Thank you, Floyd.
That came out wrong.
When we come back. Eli Gold, the voice of the Alabama Crimson Tide. He'll join us on Morning Drive.
I didn't mean open.